News, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Milk could join eggs in price jumps. Dr. Jacob Glanville, CEO of the vaccine company CentiVax, notes that there are a couple of strains of bird flu that have started to infect cows.
They will likely continue to affect our food supply because our current method is culling. It would be nice to be able to vaccinate those herds, but the alternative is you have to kill all the animals.
The Senate confirms Project 2025 architect Russell Vogt to lead the White House Budget Office. Democrats protested, but were told...
Mrs. Shaheen.
Pursuant to Rule 12, no debate is permitted during a vote.
Organizations representing federal workers ask a court to roll back President Trump's shutdown of USAID. Tom Hart, CEO of Interaction, which represents some 170 non-governmental organizations, tells Face the Nation moderator Margaret Brennan.
We think this administration will want to continue those programs. But after 90 days, some of those implementers and some of those programs will be gone.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
More trade deals by the Bucks. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. We told you about the Bucks trading 33-year-old Chris Middleton to the Wizards for two players, Kyle Kuzma and former UWM star Patrick Baldwin. Today, the Bucks sent Baldwin and some cash to the San Antonio Spurs. That opened up a roster spot for Milwaukee, so they traded third-year man Marjon Beauchamp to the Clippers for Kevin Porter Jr., a 24-year-old point guard. Last night, the Bucks added Jericho Sims, a fourth-year center from the Knicks, for guard DeLon Wright. Meanwhile, the Bucks beat the Hornets last night in Charlotte, 112-102. That ended a four-game losing streak. Afterwards, Brooke Lopez talked about when he learned that the team had traded Chris Middleton.
I wasn't aware of it until Doc mentioned it at film session, so it definitely hit me as a shock. You know, I've known Chris for a long time now, you know, I've got to know him personally, so I had to fight from tearing up a little bit, honestly. You know, it was an emotional moment for me.
That's the Bucks' Brooke Lopez. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Ready, set, go. Get in the game and be heard with WFHR's Playmakers. Join us 5 to 6 Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We're here to take your calls, sports takes, and ramblings. We'll have breaking stories, game day conversations with players, coaches, and you. Nobody ever made a highlight from the sidelines. Join the team here at WFHR 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, 5 to 6 PM Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for WFHR's Playmakers.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. I want to start off with a lot of emails about, you know, the beginning of the Trump administration, it being a lot. And I've got friends who have called me going, "Okay, take it, man. It's too much to follow. It's too much to keep up with." And that's the point. The point is they're throwing everything out there, hoping that you're going to try and consume everything. And it's just not—it's not possible for one person to do. It's really not. And you know, I've had a whole bunch of people going, "Well, how do you deal with it? You know, what should we be doing? You know, what's the way forward?" And you know, I'm not the advice guy, but there are things that I do that I think work. And you know, I start all of these off with, "You're going to do what you're going to do." And this is what I tell my friends: "You're going to do what you're going to do, but this is how I see it." And in the age of Trump, some of the things that we have to start thinking about is, well, the big one. When do you get upset? You know, when do you have that righteous indignation? When do you get your hackles up? When do you get angry? When do you start slamming your fist using those colorful words? And I find that, you know, we're in an era where we're doing it a lot. And we're doing it with each other. And this is something that I don't engage in. It's not productive. It's not helpful. So I, as an organizer, I generally label people from 1 to 5. A one is, you know, they're one. They're aces. That's someone who agrees with you probably more than you agree with yourself. And at the other end of the spectrum, you have the fives. You leave the fives alone. You're never going to convince them. You're never going to. It's a waste of your time to even address it. Leave the fives alone. Don't get your blood pressure boiling. Don't get indignant. Choose your battles. It's kind of the argument. So I don't engage in that because I'm never going to change their mind. They're not going to change my mind. And most of the time, you're just yelling past each other. Fours, I'll engage with a four because, you know, there's an opportunity to have a discussion. And if you're both listening, that's great. If you're both exchanging ideas, absolutely. And if it's productive, and if you walk away going, hey, that was worth my time, then it was time well spent. But if you walk away scratching your head going, what did I do? For instance, I had a friend who called me and said, you know, I just got out of an Uber ride and the Uber driver was, you know, he was spewing all this stuff and he was talking about how wonderful things are going to be and how, you know, he this. And he's just ticking off all of these talking points. And I said, well, what'd you do? He goes, well, I wished him well. I listened to you and said, I hope it works out for you. Good luck, buddy. And saved myself the hassle. And they go, exactly. Now, do you feel better? And they said, well, a little bit. But now me, you know, I would have just left it at that. No, had to poke a little bit. And look, that's going to happen too. But ultimately, how we're going to get through this is we need people who know what's going on. So you do have to stay somewhat informed. Tune into the program here as much as you can. And we'll talk about stuff. But know your sources. Understand who your sources are. And hopefully you choose good sources. I tend to, you know, the Times, the Post, you know, that still have some bit of journalistic integrity instead of a lot of the opinion. I want actual news. So stay informed, stay up to date, do what you're doing. But more importantly, you know, go outside, live your life. It's like the alcoholic's prayer. Know what you can change. Know what you can't. Have a little knowledge on, you know, the difference between two. Change what you can, but accept what you can't and move along. Life's too short. We will have time to organize. And this is where the action comes in. In this moment, you're going to want to find like-minded people. You're going to want to find folks in the community. You're going to join with friends and family and you're going to enjoy and functions that reduce anxiety and you know, move together. Join a party. You know, if you're a Democrat, go that route. If you're a Republican, please bring your party back somewhere to the near the sane line. That would be helpful. Find like-minded folks to do other things with. Get active in other things, but also politically stay active in what's going on in your neighborhood. Little wins are more important than feeling like you're going to change the world. This is what I suggest for myself. You start by changing the world, by changing your little piece of it. And it's that kind of organizing that is going to get us through this. Understand bad things are going to happen. It's going to. Trump is going to rob and pillage, and they're going to change our government in ways that we haven't even thought of yet. But this is a resilient country. We are a resilient people. We have seen hard times before. We've seen civil war before. Are we in a dark moment? Sure. But I got great faith in you. I got great faith in people that I know who want all the same things that we want. Good schools for our kids, safe neighborhoods, good jobs, opportunities, a future. What we're seeing right now is a destruction of the 20th century, a remaking of this country in the robber baron image. And it's our job to pay attention, stay on top of things, but stay ready for the fights that matter. And that's going to come, you know, we're going to see it and it's going to come. But this idea of, you know, recessing into the darkness, I'm not there. Now, should you limit social media? Absolutely. Stay away from, I'll stay on Twitter so you don't have to. But stay away from, you know, all of the Facebook arguments that happen. You're never going to win with the keyboard warriors. Leave it alone. I keep saying our best future is when we kill off social media, where we talk to each other. You know, it's interesting. We see a lot of stories about how my kids' generation, the Gen Z and Gen A, I guess, Alpha, how they're losing the ability to communicate face-to-face. This is an opportunity to save that. I'm a firm believer in we talk to each other eye to eye. Too many people on social media are the worst versions of themselves because they think there's anonymity. They think that they're you know, Joe 16 numbers, that nobody's going to know who they are, and they can say the most horrible, mean things to each other. I just don't engage. It's not worth the headache, and it doesn't accomplish anything. Stay out of that. And when we do have conversations, when we do talk to people that we don't necessarily agree with, you know, maybe tone it down a bit. you know, because words matter. Framing matters. And the idea that we're going to want that better future, I think, you know, persuasion is much better than just bloviating. The hope is that people who tune into this program see that there is a better way forward. And for me, I believe, and I've been saying this for years, how we reunite this country is we reunite workforces. We get people to join and form unions to fight for better lives. And for me, it always comes back to that economic message of being able to put food on the table, a roof over the head, clothes on the kids' back, an opportunity for vacations and enrichment and all of those things that we all want. But somehow, the wealthy, the powerful, they've figured out how to rip us apart. And, you know, they've told us for my whole life, we're individuals. Hooray for me, the heck with you. When the reality is we're all part of a community. And the sooner we come together with a common goal, and this is where the Democrats have to figure out what their message is. And we talked about this the other day, the message of healthcare and education and opportunity and all of that has to be their vision. We've got to get away from the stuff that divides and come back to what unites us. And I know that's easy to say, and it is. It's easy to say. It's hard to do. But we've been there before. It is possible. We just have to want to be able to do it. And that, again, comes back down to what I've been talking about. The idea of staying educated, staying active, you know, using good information, and staying off of social media. I mean, I can't emphasize that one enough. Because at this point, it's all garbage in, garbage out. You know, Twitter at the beginning, you know, I remember sleeping on the Capitol floor in Wisconsin during the uprising in 2011. And I remember a sign on the wall that said, thank you, CNN, for telling me what's on Twitter, because the people on the ground were actually taking their responsibility seriously. They were actually reporting real things instead of this idea that now it's just all about trolling and getting attention. And I have no use for people who, hey, look at me. I have no use for that. I have no use for people who spew nonsense and just want to troll to get a rise out of me. And I don't allow it. And you shouldn't either. This idea that we're going to let people upset us, we are the ones who control that. Now, are bad things going to happen? Yeah, as I said. But we've got to start planning on how do we take that back? And that happens at the ballot box. That happens at organizing, getting people to the polls. And in the midterms, there being a figurative bloodbath. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So again, the latest attack on federal workers, because the war on workers is continuing. The Trump administration is now saying through OPM, the Office of Personnel Management, that those contracts that were signed, you know, those labor contracts that have been in place, we don't have to honor them. Especially the part about telework. Evidently, they believe that they have management rights and they can do basically, I guess, whatever they want. So, again, it's that canary in the coal mine thing. First, they came for the federal workers and you said nothing. And then eventually they're going to come for all of us. But here to share some thoughts on, well, what this means. I'm asking Phil Glover to come talk with us. Phil is AFGE District 3's National Vice President. Phil, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thanks, Rick, for reaching out. Appreciate it.
So what do you make of this? A contract, I thought a contract was a contract. It was signed. It was vetted. Went through all the whole process. It's enforced. Can we just go, yeah, we changed our mind?
Yeah, they've been on this progression since the inauguration. They started out, everybody from remote work has to come back. Then they realized that there are federal contracts in place between labor and management. Then they said, well, we'll call everybody else back and we'll deal with the bargaining unit people last. We'll deal with them last. And then today a memo came out that said that basically, while we have these contracts and they've been signed, really telework, remote work, that's a management right and it can't be in a contract. That's probably illegal. So they could probably override us and abrogate our agreements there if they want. Certainly we don't agree, but this is what it's been a progression over the last 2 weeks.
And not surprising. Look, you know, during the election, they said you guys were the target, whether it was Project 2025 and Schedule F or all of this other stuff. I think this was predictable, no?
Absolutely. We told our members this kind of thing would happen if he was reelected. And that's exactly what's happening. Not just this, but all kind of crazy stuff.
No, all kind of crazy stuff. And, you know, we had talked the other day about Elon Musk and how he's ferreted his way, you know, basically into the government's checkbook. And the thought is, you know, I think, majority thought now is that he's going to try and do to the federal government what he did to Twitter, and that is to cut right through the bone and not just, you know, if there's fat somewhere, which I'm not saying there is, but, you know, we're talking deep, painful kind of cuts that we citizens will absolutely notice through lack of service and not getting our needs met. But what do you think of that?
Yeah, today AFG actually with SEIU, ARA, and Public Citizen actually filed a lawsuit against the access that he has had at the Treasury Department. And so we are trying to push back through legal means for his access. We have the Office of Personnel Management that apparently him and some of his cronies have been digging around in the files of federal employees and retirees. And we're looking at that as well to push back on. These are things that I don't think even the worst of the things we could think of is that a billionaire was going to come into the government and have unfettered access to data and privacy information of federal workers and the public. What people don't understand, the Treasury Department has all of your files. They have all your tax returns. He should not have access to this type of material at all. This is not how things should be done. And so we are, the other thing we're doing is reaching out to members of Congress, asking them, you know, create these laws. He seems to be ignoring them. What are you going to do? And so we're pushing on that end as well.
Which is why you guys need to be taken out, because we can't have anyone asking questions about, you know, about our move to fascism with unions around to be poking around and demanding answers to questions. Can't have that.
No. And then believe me, you know, we are the target, but they're trying to, like, this resignation letter that they sent out, you know. Again, on March 14th, the government, if there's no funding agreement, will shut down. So how you're going to pay federal employees 8 months to sit at home resigned from the federal government until they decide to retire later in the year, I don't know where that money's coming from. Congress has not appropriated any money for that. And so, you know, you have to get those things through appropriations. You know, Bill Clinton did buyouts back when he was president. That was all approved by Congress. The amount of money, how many, all that stuff was done through Congress. And that, this is just totally backwards.
So I guess the question is, we continue
to push and yell.
Because, look, I got a lot of questions on this because, you know, it was first proposed as a buyout, and then it was, oh, well, you just don't have to come to work. You can just sit at home and collect a check, which would play into their framing that federal workers don't do any actual work. And, look, we're paying for them to sit home, and they're not doing anything, and we're not missing anything. You know that's going to be the message that they come out with. And also, you know, this idea that you're not going to have to work, there's some question of, well, maybe you will. So it's not really, as I understand it, what they've laid out. In fact, most people that I've talked to don't even know what they've laid out.
This is something that we understand they did, you know, at Twitter. When he bought Twitter and he came in and he wanted to get rid of everybody. Well, you just resign and we're going to pay you for so many months and you can go on vacation, go find another job, whatever. This is even the title of the memo, Fork in the Road. Is exactly the title of that, what he did at Twitter. So we already knew that once we looked into it. And we've explained to federal employees that, you know, number one, this is no way to handle downsizing of government. If you're going to have Congress, you know, Congress is supposed to do oversight. They should be holding hearings on what programs, the things that we do, how much they're going to fund them. That's how the authorization process works. This is just unbelievable how they're trying to go at this. And, you know, today, I guess President Trump made him a special government employee somehow. There's some new thing I saw. He's now a special government employee so that he can muck around in federal agencies, I guess. Still doesn't have any vetting, has no official role, but, you know, this committee, this DOGE committee, we filed suit on it the first day because it wasn't created properly. It doesn't comply with federal law. It's supposed to have opposite views on it. It's supposed to be transparent. That's not what's happening here. And so there's a lawsuit going on that as well.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and this is what bothers me about you know, the wheels of justice grinding slowly and an administration that continually flips their nose at it. They're doing all of these things. All of our information, all of this data is being collected and I would argue being misused. And let's say the courts say, hey, you can't do that. What's the recourse? You know, it's already done. We've already, you know, the morale, as I understand it, for federal employees is fairly low. I got friends who live in D.C. and they say things ain't good here. You know, people aren't happy. You know, the people doing the people's work, not thrilled because, well, morale is at an all-time low. And that, again, plays into this anti-government sentiment of, you know, government can't do anything. See, look. So this just seems to be them getting away with it.
Unfortunately, the rule of law sometimes doesn't work the way it should. You know, we know that from the president. Let's face it. You know, he was charged. You know, he should have been charged earlier. He should have gone to court earlier. and he wrote out the clock. And now a lot of people in the FBI and the Justice Department have been fired because they did their jobs. And now they're being fired for it. These are things, this country better wake up. And the American public, even the ones that, you know, didn't go vote or were moderates and decided, well, I don't like Harris and I'm going to vote for this guy instead because I want something different. I don't like Biden. He's boring. Whatever the reasons were, you better wake up now. This is not good. The country should not be going through this. And, you know, the normal course of order is being hammered. And I hope to God that the American public wakes up, that Republicans in Congress stand up at some point, that our other labor leaders who were kind of not too clear in the last election start to speak out. Because if you said about federal employees going first, the NLRB has already been chopped. The National Labor Relations Board, he went in and fired members of that so that he could make it impotent. It can't run now. They can't do cases. That's private sector. That isn't us.
Right.
So he's already attacked the private sector unions. They just don't know it yet, or they haven't felt it yet because their cases are going to be not moving. And then they're going to be saying, what's going on? So I hope everybody wakes up.
Because ultimately, as I said, you know, federal employees are the ones being kicked around right now. And all during the campaign, we talked about, you know, Trump wanting to use this Schedule F thing and then firing a bunch of federal employees and replacing them with good, you know, loyalists, people who have been properly vetted on their allegiance to Trump and their loyalty to Trump, not the ability to do the job, but that they were sufficiently loyal in their social media posts. And then, you know, making patronage great again. Are we seeing those firings? I know we've seen the attorney generals or the inspector generals and those things. Are we seeing that next level down that I thought Schedule F was going to be targeting? Or is that something we have to look forward to?
I think it's starting to filter down into the agencies. I think the FBI just had a survey go out to all of its agents. And we don't represent the FBI, but they have an association. And their association is pushing back. And there are loyalty questions in those documents about loyalty, and it's to him. This is the slippery slope of, you know, frankly, fascism. And if we don't wake up and talk about it and push our fellow Americans to understand what's happening here, they think, you know, there's a lot of these people that think it's, you know, an exercise. He's just Trump. This goes beyond that. There are people around him, this Musk. You look at what he's doing in Germany, some of the other things that are going on, some of these people he's put into place, Pete Hegseth at DOD. These are loyalists. They will do anything the man tells them to do, whether it's legal or not. And we either need to step up or pack it up. And, you know, right now, I don't think AFG is ready to pack anything.
No, and that's
we signed up 8,000 members this month.
I was going to ask about that because, you know, these attacks have got to be waking hopefully some of your members up to going, hey, we do need this. And out of this for me, as I've been saying all along, from election night forward, that the solutions will come from their savagery. The suffering that their savagery causes, that's what will bring solutions about. Because my premise is, and you can agree if you want, is that the only time we do things in this country, the only time we unite in this country, is when there's chaos and tragedy, when there's mass suffering. We don't do it because it's the right thing. We have to suffer for it. And I think, you know, firing of federal employees, I think, you know, if the economy takes a massive downturn from, you know, his threatening tariffs and all that, out of that comes organizing and organizing opportunities. And it's interesting to hear that 8,000 new members in just a month.
Yeah, and I think if you saw what happened after they shut off the Medicaid websites across the country, there was starting to be screaming. And even Republican members of Congress who like to be reelected every 2 years, and there's an election coming, even they're going to have to sit up and say, wait a minute, what are we doing here? That's not really what we ran on. Yeah, we want to make you work for your Medicaid or whatever it is, but we don't want to shut this all down. So I think people are going to have to pick a side eventually here. I think at first it sounds fun owning the libs, whatever these MAGA people are doing. So we're just going to keep plugging away here, Rick.
There you go. Keep it up. And thank goodness you're there. Keep fighting for workers in this country, Phil. And as always, I appreciate the time.
Thank you for bringing us on.
Phil Glover, AFGE District 3 National Vice President. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, Jordan Barab's going to be here to share some thoughts on, yeah, there's a member of Congress who's saying, yeah, we don't need that stinking OSHA. His NOSHA bill to nullify the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. We'll talk about that next. Quick break. Back after this.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight with the wind dying down, cold though, low near 5 above. Increasing clouds for tomorrow, a high in the low 20s. Then a winter storm watch for several inches of snow late Friday night into Saturday. Highs in the low 20s. Currently, it's 12 degrees.
Hi, everyone. Seth here from Seth Faces the Music. You know, being the host of the award-winning second greatest radio show in the state of Wisconsin can be a lot of work. I have to come up with new themes all the time. So in the interest of clarity, here are some topics I will not be using in upcoming episodes.
Mittens, tinfoil, gastric bypass surgery, window treatments, 17th century Japanese art, outhouses, bowler hats, spam, clog dancing.
Seth Faces the Music, every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. only on WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Freedom Caucus idiot is back at it again. Evidently, we need to nullify OSHA. He has come up with, again, the NOSHA bill to, well, do just that. It's that simply written. There isn't anything more than we're gonna nullify OSHA. We're going to take away the Occupational Safety and Health Administration that protects millions of workers. Andy Biggs, the Republican from Arizona, 5th District there. He's been in Congress since 2017. This has kind of been his thing. And here we are again. And here to share some thoughts on House Resolution 86, I've asked my good friend Jordan Barab to come talk with us. Jordan is the former acting assistant secretary and deputy assistant secretary of labor for OSHA during the Obama years. Also runs the best website for protecting workers and pointing out all of the horrible things that go on. You can check that out at jordanbarab.com/confined space. Jordan, thanks for taking time for us.
Happy to be here, Rick.
So here we are again, House Resolution 86. We're going to 86 OSHA, I guess, huh?
I guess so. Yeah, this is Andy Biggs again. This is, I think, probably the third time he's introduced this bill and the third time he's gotten almost no support for it. So it's just kind of his, cry in the wilderness there that he doesn't like what OSHA does. Mainly because he's from Arizona, and OSHA has given Arizona, especially when it had a Republican governor, a hard time because OSHA, Arizona is an OSHA state plan state. OSHA state plan states have to be at least as effective as the federal government. And there were several times that Arizona OSHA refused to adopt either standards or policies that federal OSHA had adopted. And so federal OSHA finally got fed up and said, look, you guys do what you're supposed to do. Or we will take away your state plan. And that's what got Andy Biggs all riled up. Eventually the state caved in, but Andy Biggs is still pissed off.
Yeah, well, protecting workers gets his panties all in a bunch. And look, why not? Most of the people there, I guess they're not important, I guess. Because I'm trying to figure out why you would be against protecting people in the workplace unless you're somebody who, well, is on the other side of that.
Well, his theory is a little more dangerous than the bill itself. His theory is that the states should take care of it, right? Okay. Leave it to the states, no better, you know, the whole states' rights thing. But, you know, we tried that, you know, from 1776 until 1970. It didn't work very well. You know, what happens when you let all the states have different policies is that some states do a good job, you know, of protecting workers. Some states do nothing. And you have the inevitable race to the bottom where every state is trying to, you know, lower the protections, lower the requirements on employers to lure business from the state next door. So it just doesn't work in this case to have, you know, every state do its own health and safety protections.
Are there any states that have no OSHA protections other than the federal government?
Well, yeah. I mean, the way OSHA works is there are 21 states that have their own programs, their own state plans. Now, those state plans, again, have to be at least as effective as the federal government. And you have really good ones like California, which has a lot of standards, for example, that OSHA doesn't have. And you have states, you know, like South Carolina and Arizona, you know, when they had a Republican governor that basically tried to do as little as possible. The other 29 states are controlled by federal OSHA. Federal OSHA does all the inspections. They do all the investigations, citations, and that kind of thing.
This is the weird thing, Jordan. I mean, this comes down to a red-blue thing, it sounds like. I mean, because California does it really well. South Carolina, you know, predictably, and I would guess I could probably throw in there Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, them
too. Well, they don't have their own state plan states, but the states that do, I mean, North Carolina, South Carolina, Kentucky, Tennessee, Wyoming, Nevada, you know, those are all states that are, you know, fairly to the right that have, you know, that run their own state programs, and some of them not very well. So, it's all, you know, for federal OSHA to control these 21 state plans is kind of like herding cats. OSHA, you know, the feds don't really have the funding or the capacity to really monitor this, all those state plans very well.
Right.
We tried to do a lot more on that. It was a lot of resistance because the states, you know, resent that. They see themselves as equal partners to federal OSHA, where actually the way the law is written, it's more of a parent-child relationship. You know, they have to do what federal OSHA tells them to do.
At least the minimum. You could do better. And that's
absolutely
the, and that's the thing about federal regulations. This is the floor. Do better.
Exactly. And that's why several states, for example, have heat standards, you know, to protect workers against high heat, which federal OSHA doesn't have. They were working on it, but I'm sure Trump will stop it. But yeah, there are a bunch of states that have, California, Nevada, Oregon, Maryland, Colorado, Minnesota, all have heat standards. And the federal government doesn't have it. And the rest of the, you know, 21 state plans don't have that either.
Interesting. Now, any chance Biggs's plan, you know, passes this time around, you get enough Republicans to push this through? Any chance of that happening?
Yeah, I don't think, you know, that this bill is going to go anywhere. Again, he never gets any support for it. And the way the Republicans work, they don't, you know, if they go after the Occupational Safety and Health Act, if they actually go in a, you know, full frontal assault on a worker's right to come home safe at the end of the day, to have a safe workplace, you know, that doesn't go over so well. What they are probably going to do in order to attack OSHA is let, you know, OSHA exist, but cut its budget down to nothing. That way you basically, you know, destroy the agency from the inside. And God knows what else they have. You know, I mean, we've been seeing what they've been doing at AID and some of the other agencies. Who knows what they have in store for OSHA. But it'll probably most likely come through the appropriations process, not a specific piece of legislation.
Or Elon Musk and his hatchet that he's been wielding here lately.
Exactly. Yeah, we don't know what, you know, what I mean. Happily, in this case, OSHA is kind of a small agency. So, you know, it's not up front in terms of top of their priorities. But yeah, we haven't seen yet what's actually happening.
Yeah, it's not front and center in the top of their priorities, but it is ideologically part of things that I think, and then this is where my mindset is, that I see the Republican Party being against, even though it was Nixon who signed it in the law, a Republican. It seems to me these last several years, it's been the Republicans who have done their foolhardy best to neuter and ultimately, you know, destroy it.
Yeah, you know, it's not only Nixon that signed it. I mean, this bill like passed the Senate, I think, with 3 votes against it. I mean, it had overwhelming bipartisan support when it was passed in 1970. Yeah, the problem is that obviously one of the, you know, the core principles of Republicans in general, but especially the MAGA Trump Republicans, is anti-regulatory stuff. You know, let businesses be businesses, let them be free, you know, to do whatever they want. And so, you know, when they start attacking regulations, they, you know, the first target is usually EPA, but then the second target is, you know, OSHA.
Let's talk about what freedom looks like, though. I mean, this idea that they're free from regulation for the average working person, for me going to working for a trucking company, for my friend who works for a construction company building houses, for you know the people that I know who work in fast food or retail or any of those kind of jobs, what does this kind of freedom look like for them?
Yeah,
you know, because we have a history.
You're a worker. I mean, you want to be free to come home alive at the end of the day. You want to be free to come home and injured at the end of the day. You want to be free not to be terrified every time you go to work that you're going to get hurt or die in the workplace because the employer isn't doing what it's supposed to do and following, you know, basic, as you say, minimal OSHA requirements. So that's the kind of freedom that people want, not the freedom for corporations to do whatever they can to screw over, you know, whoever they want to screw over.
Now, you know, I've had this conversation a number of times because I think we've gotten to a point in our society that we assume a lot of things have always been as they are now. The idea that we do have somewhat safe workplaces. There are a lot of instances where we could use improvement, but this isn't the 1880s. You know, there are things that we do take for granted today that most people have never thought about of going, gee, I wonder how that happened. Can you walk me through some of what OSHA has accomplished, you know, during the tenure? What are we 50 some years in?
Yeah, I mean, it's been 54 years now. I mean, the obvious things we've seen, you know, the number and the rate of fatalities and injuries come down significantly, you know, in the last 50 years. So it's basically saved lives and saves people health and let people live longer. But it also, I mean, in a way, even more important, it gives workers rights. Again, it gives them the right to a safe workplace. It makes employers responsible for providing a safe workplace. If a worker gets hurt, it's generally, you know, I do, you know, a weekly toll every week of workers getting killed on the job. You know, you look at all of them that get killed in factories and falls and construction, you know, it's all because the employer did not comply with health and safety standards.
Right.
And so, you know, you have a lot of health and safety standards that you didn't have before. You have to use fall protection to keep you from falling off a roof. You know, there was no right to that, to have that, no obligation to provide that, you know, before the Occupational Safety and Health Act was passed.
What do you say to the person who goes, well, we've learned we're better than that now. You know, going forward, we're not going to do those bad things anymore. We don't need this because we learned.
One would hope so. Yeah. But I mean, you know, those who are in power now don't care what we've learned. They just, you know, they're in power now to expand the freedom of corporate America to do whatever the hell it wants, no matter who gets in their way or what happens to people.
Now, it's interesting, you know, when I hear people talk about OSHA, it's always in a complaint. I work in an environment where there are a lot of forklifts, and boy, everybody complains that they have to wear a seatbelt while they're on the forklift, which is an OSHA thing, because if you happen to hit a dock plate with the fork while going at full speed, you tend to get catapulted toward the steel beam that goes across the top. And there have been people who have been killed doing that. But every time I hear, damn, OSHA makes me wear this seatbelt, infringing on my freedom, Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, you know, employers play that up too. You know, we'd give you a raise if we could, but it's so expensive for us to comply with OSHA, and you know, we're afraid, you know, if we get cited by OSHA, you know, that's going to, it's going to harm our profit, you know, and therefore your pay. So yeah, employers tend to turn workers against OSHA. But you know, you wait till somebody gets hurt and they really wish they had been wearing that fall protection or had that seatbelt on. And, you know, I mean, you know, forklifts almost every week when I'm doing the weekly call, there's at least one person that's killed, because of some kind of forklift accident.
Yeah. Whether they're going off the dock or, you know, hitting their head on the crossbeam. I've heard all of those stories, or, you know, one, that a guy, you know, stood up and got his head caught between the boom.
Yeah.
And squished like a grape. That is not good.
No. And it happens all the time. And it's you know, almost always because they violated an OSHA standard.
So why don't we hear those stories? I mean, you do a great job over at jordanbarab.com/confined spaces of compiling these things. You know, why, from a worker standpoint, aren't we hearing those things to reinforce the message that, you know, maybe that OSHA thing that we don't know what it stands for, Occupational Safety and Health Administration, maybe that kind of is important when someone like Andy Biggs goes, we want to nullify that, we want to neuter it, we want to do away with it, or when Republicans say we want to cut their budget, that we reflexively go, no, we need that.
Yeah. And the problem is, I do the weekly toll, right? I have like 100 different Google searches out there. I mean, there are about 100 workers killed in the workplace every week. And I only usually get about 20 of those. And I think I do a pretty good media search. So that means there's about 80% of the people killed in the workplace never show up in the newspaper. Nobody ever finds out about it. Nobody knows anything. So part of it is just, you know, the public awareness. I mean, back in the day before OSHA, when everybody was working in manufacturing and there were, 10 times as many, fatalities in the workplace, everybody knew somebody that had gotten killed in the workplace. You know, now it's not quite that way. And it's hard to get the press to cover these issues. I mean, most, there are no labor reporters anymore. Even the press that does cover a lot of these issues don't know how to cover it. You know, they'll say, oh, there's a guy that was, killed in a 13-foot deep trench. And we don't know why the trench collapsed. Well, the trench collapsed because it was too deep and it was in violation of a million OSHA standards, but they don't know that. I mean, I spend a lot of time writing to reporters about, how to report better on these things. And the same thing with Congress. One thing I'd love to have do, it's too much time for me to do, but, take every one of the deaths that we find in the workplace, take the article and send it to their congressman, so they'll understand, that they're actually, their constituents are getting killed because the corporations are taking advantage of them.
And this is something I think unions should do a lot better job of. I mean, this, for me, safety is one of those issues that you go, yeah, this is a reason to join a union. I've said it before. I've got a lot of miles driving up and down the road as a truck driver. And I can honestly say that I've never knowingly taken a vehicle on the road that's been unsafe. Yeah. And that's because I, one, do a pre-trip, and two, have the backing of my union when I say, no, those brakes are out of adjustment. This isn't moving until that's fixed.
Exactly.
And they've got my back to do that. I know a lot of truck drivers who can't say that.
Yeah, but I mean, even the unions are, they've cut way back. I mean, unions are having a hard time in many ways financially, and they've all tended to cut back on their health and safety staff. I mean, the Teamsters, your union just got rid of their entire health and safety department. So what that means is, I mean, the standards are still out there, the rules are still out there, but if there's nobody to educate, the union members and nobody to educate the shop stewards, to how to defend a grievance or even to how to file a grievance around a health and safety issue, it doesn't do much good. So, I mean, the unions, they really need to get, ideally much more involved in health and safety issues.
I'm with you. Last line of questioning I've got, obviously, Biggs's bill is.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So Freedom Caucus idiot is back at it again. Evidently, we need to nullify OSHA. He has come up with, again, the NOSHA bill to do just that. It's that simply written. There isn't anything more than we're gonna nullify OSHA. We're going to take away the Occupational Safety and Health Administration that protects millions of workers. Andy Biggs, the Republican from Arizona, 5th District there. He's been in Congress since 2017. This has kind of been his thing. And here we are again. And here to share some thoughts on House Resolution 86, I've asked my good friend Jordan Barab to come talk with us. Jordan is a former acting assistant secretary and deputy assistant secretary of labor for OSHA during the Obama years. Also runs the best website for protecting workers and pointing out all of the horrible things that go on. You can check that out at jordanbarab.com/confined space. Jordan, thanks for taking time for us.
Happy to be here, Rick.
So here we are again, House Resolution 86. We're going to 86 OSHA, I guess, huh?
I guess so. Yeah, this is Andy Biggs again. This is, I think, probably the third time he's introduced this bill, and the third time he's gotten almost no support for it. So it's just kind of his, cry in the wilderness there that he doesn't like what OSHA does. Mainly because he's from Arizona, and OSHA has given Arizona, especially when it had a Republican governor, a hard time because OSHA, Arizona is an OSHA state plan state. OSHA state plan states have to be at least as effective as the federal government. And there were several times that Arizona OSHA refused to adopt either standards or policies that federal OSHA had adopted. And so federal OSHA finally got fed up and said, look, you guys do what you're supposed to do. Or we will take away your state plan. And that's what got Andy Biggs all riled up. Eventually the state caved in, but Andy Biggs is still pissed off.
Yeah, well, protecting workers gets his panties all in a bunch. And look, why not? Most of the people there, they're not important, I guess. Because I'm trying to figure out why you would be against protecting people in the workplace unless you're somebody who, is on the other side of that.
Well, his theory is a little more dangerous than the bill itself. His theory is that the states should take care of it, right? Okay. Leave it to the states, no better, the old states' rights thing. But we tried that, from 1776 until 1970. It didn't work very well. What happens when you let all the states have different policies is that some states do a good job, of protecting workers. Some states do nothing, and you have the inevitable race to the bottom where every state is trying to, lower the protections, lower the requirements on employers to lure business from the state next door. So it just doesn't work,
right?
In this case, to have, every state do its own health and safety protections.
Are there any states that have no OSHA protections other than the federal government?
Well, yeah. I mean, the way OSHA works is there are 21 states that have their own programs, their own state plans. Now, those state plans, again, have to be at least as effective as the federal government. And you have really good ones like California, which has a lot of standards, for example, that OSHA doesn't have. And you have states, like South Carolina and Arizona, when they had a Republican governor that basically tried to do as little as possible. The other 29 states are controlled by federal OSHA. Federal OSHA does all the inspections. They do all the investigations, citations, and that kind of thing.
This is the weird thing, Jordan. I mean, this comes down to a red-blue thing, it sounds like. I mean, because California does it really well. South Carolina, predictably, and I would guess I could probably throw in there Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, them too.
Well, they don't have their own state plan states, but the states that do, I mean, North Carolina, South Carolina, Kentucky, Tennessee, Wyoming, Nevada, those are all states that are, fairly to the right. That have, that run their own state programs and some of them not very well. So it's always, for federal OSHA to control these 21 state plans is kind of like herding cats. OSHA, the feds don't really have the funding or the capacity to really monitor all those state plans very well.
Right.
We tried to do a lot more on that. It was a lot of resistance because the states, resent that. They see themselves as equal partners to federal OSHA, where actually the way the law is written, it's more of a parent-child relationship. They have to do what federal OSHA tells them to do.
At least the minimum. You could do better. And that's
absolutely.
And that's the thing about federal regulations. This is the floor. Do better.
Exactly. And that's why several states, for example, have heat standards, you know, to protect workers against high heat, which federal OSHA doesn't have. They were working on it, but I'm sure Trump will stop it. But yeah, there are a bunch of states that have, you know, California, Nevada, Oregon, Maryland, Colorado, Minnesota, all have heat standards. And the federal government doesn't have it. And the rest of the, you know, 21 state plans don't have that either.
Interesting. Now, any chance Biggs's plan, you know, passes this time around? You get enough Republicans to push this through? Any chance of that happening?
Yeah, I don't think you know that this bill is going to go anywhere. Again, he never gets any support for it. And the way the Republicans work, they don't, you know, if they go after the Occupational Safety and Health Act, if they actually go in a, you know, full frontal assault on a worker's right to come home safe at the end of the day, to have a safe workplace, you know, that doesn't go over so well. What they are probably going to do in order to attack OSHA is let, you know, OSHA exist, but cut its budget down to nothing. That way you basically, you know, destroy the agency from the inside. And God knows what else they have. You know, I mean, we've been seeing what they've been doing at AID and some of the other agencies. Who knows what they have in store for OSHA. But it'll probably most likely come through the appropriations process, not the specific piece of legislation.
Or Elon Musk and his hatchet that he's been wielding here lately.
Exactly. Yeah, we don't know what, you know, what I mean. Happily, in this case, OSHA is kind of a small agency. So, you know, it's not up front in terms of top of their priorities. But yeah, we haven't seen yet what's actually happening.
Yeah, it's not front and center in the top of their priorities, but it is ideologically part of things that I think, and then this is where my mindset is, that I see the Republican Party being against, even though it was Nixon who signed it in the law. A Republican. It seems to me these last several years, it's been the Republicans who have done their foolhardy best to neuter and ultimately, you know.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. The NCAA falls in line with President Trump's mandate on transgender athletes. Reporter Erica Herskowitz.
If you're assigned female at birth, then and only then can you participate in women's sports. That's the latest NCAA policy change for transgender athletes. The move comes just a day after President Trump signed an executive order intended to ban transgender athletes from participating in women's sports, a decision the NCAA says provides a, quote, clear national standard.
A federal judge temporarily blocks the Justice Department from releasing a list of FBI agents who helped investigate January 6th rioters. CBS's Scott McFarlane has been speaking with agents about their concerns regarding making information public.
They were part, under orders, of the investigation into January 6th, and that has metastasized into some form of a search for retribution that's going to fall on their shoulders.